Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I want to tell you about Project Hagile, or Hagile. I've honestly got no idea how it's pronounced, and it doesn't matter either because it's a completely made-up word, as we'll come to. Project Hagile was a project that the British worked on during the Second World War when the Directorate of Miscellaneous Weapons Development was given orders to develop a new landing system for airdropped equipment and supplies. And so you're thinking, oh boy, this is going to be a cracker. A new landing system? That's what we get to talk about this week? Oh my goodness, I better hold my sides because I'm going to be in stitches. Well, look, I, from the outset, maybe this doesn't sound like the most entertaining or amusing topic, but let me tell you this. There are more than a few completely wild inventions that the maniacs at the DMWD developed throughout the war. But of all of them, the Hagile might just be the most entertaining. So there's more to this story than you might think from first blush. Thanks go out to alert listener Ryan Brady, who suggested that I have a look at some of the things made by the DMWD. Those boys had ideas. Let me tell you, they had some ideas. Thank you very much, Ryan, for putting me onto this. Anyway, back in 1943 or 1944, the Second World War obviously raging on, the Americans have finally turned up. Thanks for that. Better late than never. But around this time, the British Army is faced with a very specific problem that they need solved. They want to be able to drop heavy equipment, like really heavy, we're talking like cars and things here, to troops on the ground from aeroplanes up in the sky. However, they don't want to use parachutes, which will probably prompt you to ask the question, why? And the answer to that question is because they wanted to drop this equipment at high speed, which will probably once again prompt you to ask the very same question, why? Wouldn't dropping something very heavy at a very high speed just damage or destroy it? Well, yes, but it does come with a range of other benefits. For instance, the faster you drop something, the more reliably you can predict where it's going to land, so you can aim with greater accuracy where you want to make these airdrops. And secondly, the faster they drop, the less vulnerable they are to being shot down by enemy anti-aircraft weapons. So there's a lot to be said for making these military airdrops as swiftly as possible. And so this was why the DMWD was tasked with figuring out a way to get these heavy airdrops to the ground at high speed without them being smashed to smithereens. And the solution that the DMWD went after was the use of retro rockets, which is to say rockets that point in the direction opposite to the one that the thing they're attached to is traveling. So if the thing is falling down, the rockets point up. Now, ordinarily, you know, I probably don't need to tell you this, but ordinarily you orient the pointy end of a rocket in the direction that you want something to go, and you point the dangerous end in the other. Well, I guess both ends of a rocket are dangerous in their own special ways, really. In fact, most parts of a rocket are. That's kind of the whole point of a rocket, is just being dangerous. But with retro rockets, you're essentially attempting to reverse an object's direction, right? When they fire, they provide thrust in the opposite direction to the one that the object is traveling in, which will slow down whatever they're attached to, rather than, you know, doing what rockets ordinarily do in speeding something up. So you load the airdrop into a plane, you drop it out above where you want it to land, you let gravity do most of the work as it falls to Earth, but then just before the package hits the ground, you fire the rockets to slow it down, and so it lands relatively gently with its contents hopefully unharmed. Now, having settled on this highly inventive approach, the DMWD built a landing contraption, basically a great big box, kind of looks like one of those temporary classrooms from when you went to school that never actually ended up being temporary. And they strapped the retro rockets to this great big box and then would be able to load the equipment or supplies or material or vehicles or whatever else inside the box for hopefully what would be a safe landing. But the first step was to test if this idea would even work in the first place. And, well, look, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but the short answer is no, it didn't. It did not work, not at all. But the DMWD had to find this out for themselves, and so started running tests by dropping Hagile, the landing apparatus that they'd come up with, along with its rockets attached, from a tall crane. And the results were truly hilarious. Let me tell you about them, right? So the first problem they came across was the timing of when the rockets were to be fired. It was no good just having a bloke there with, I don't know, a remote control, a radio signal that, you know, you press a button and the rockets fire, because while that might work on the testing grounds, it's not going to work when it's being dropped out of the plane. It needs to be automated somehow, right? And the reason for this is, it's pretty obvious, think about it. Like, if the rockets fire too early, then once they're finished firing, once they're finished slowing down the box, gravity will just rip it back down to Earth at a great speed again. So you can't have the rockets fire too early because it'll crash into the ground. But if they fire too late, well, you'll see what happens if they fire too late. We'll come to that. You'll have to wait because it's very, very funny. Anyway, the solution that the DMWD came up with to automate the firing of the rockets, right, was to hang what's called a plumb bob from the bottom of the box, essentially just a weight on a string that when it touched the ground, it would trigger the rockets ahead of time, right? So figure out the right length of the string, figure out how far above the ground the box needed to be before the rockets fired, and you could consistently fire these rockets when the box was the optimal distance above the ground. So great, that's that problem solved. Now proper testing can begin. You can and very much should go online and find footage of what I'm about to describe here when talking about these initial tests, dropping Hagile from the crane, because it is extremely funny to watch. The first crane test began by dropping Hagile with its rockets from the crane, except the geniuses at the DMWD severely underestimated how much fuel the rockets would require. So when they dropped Hagile from the crane, the rockets didn't provide nearly enough thrust to slow it down, and so it crashed to Earth and embedded itself Looney Tunes-like into the ground. Lucky they had the crane nearby to drag it back out, I guess. But the second time they added more fuel, this still wasn't enough. Once again, it belly flopped to the ground like a dad from a diving board. And so bugger this for a joke, so the engineers, they've had enough. They fill this thing to the brim with rocket fuel. This'll sort the bastard out, they say. And seriously, I will say once again, you have to go and find this footage. Search for a video on YouTube called British Inventions That Blooped. Scroll across to around the 2.5 minute mark and you'll see what happened, right? Hagile fell from the crane. The rockets this time didn't fire in time. It crashed to the ground. Then the rockets fired, and of course they were filled with way too much fuel, which blasted Hagile straight back up into the air, and of course, straight back up into the crane. This is what I was talking about before, right? When I was saying how what happened when the rockets fired too late. They made Hagile, after crashing to Earth, they made it jump into the air like a cat in those videos where someone puts a cucumber behind their food bowls, completely defeating the purpose of Project Hagile in the first place. You may notice in the video too just how much fire and smoke the rockets produced. And this, interestingly, is where Project Hagile got its name. Because during the first ever test, right, there was a bloke who was watching on, his name's Captain Jock Davies, and he quipped, after seeing all this fire, all this smoke, he quipped that it was Elijah in reverse, based on the Christian myth of the prophet Elijah ascending to heaven in a chariot of fire. And so, from Captain Davies describing it as Elijah in reverse, we got Hagile, which is Elijah in reverse. It's Elijah spelt backwards, right? Elijah ascended to heaven in a chariot of fire. Hagile crashes down to Earth in a chariot of fire. Anyway, realizing that this crane approach probably wasn't the best way to test Hagile, you know, above the hard, unforgiving ground, the DMWD instead decided to test it above a slightly more forgiving surface, namely water. The only problem was they couldn't use a crane to drop it above water, so instead they killed two birds with one stone and tested it by dropping it out of an aeroplane. They loaded it into a Lancaster bomber, which would then fly above the water and drop it out. And in addition to killing two birds with one stone, they also very nearly killed a lot of people with one Hagile too. Because the problem was, with the first few drops, the plane was landing this thing way too far out in the water, so far out that they couldn't observe or film what was going on properly. So new orders were given to the pilot, therefore, to drop the payload a lot closer to the shore, near the DMWD headquarters, where all the observers would be watching and filming and could actually see what happened. And at this stage, you can probably tell where this is going, right? Well, you know, we'll leave it to an actual eyewitness, a bystander, this is a first-hand account from a DMWD engineer, a bloke by the name of Gerald Paul, who described what happened like this. As Hagile came screaming through the air, the watchers on the pier gazed, open-mouthed. Then, suddenly realizing that it was going to score a direct hit, everyone started running for dear life down the long plank roadway. The concrete bomb landed squarely on the roof of DMWD's engineering shop. It sheared through a massive steel joist and then demolished the covered way leading to the steamer jetty. Happily, there were no casualties, though the cooks preparing the lunch a few feet from the wrecked shelter thought the end of the world had come. I will say, though, once they figured out testing Hagile above water, things started to get better and better for the DMWD, because they added more rockets. They figured out how to space them out around Hagile and fire them in a way that resulted in the box more or less stopping dead in the air just above the water's surface, thanks to the thrust of these rockets, which was exactly what they wanted, right? It stopped crashing into the water at a million miles an hour. The bomber pilots were able to control the release of the box, and the plumb bob fired at the right time, so the rockets would provide a decently controlled and relatively gentle landing. So as much fun as we're having here, you know, having a bit of a laugh at Project Hagile's expense, making a mockery of this whole thing, it actually started to seem like this idea might have legs after all. And so the DMWD, they get ready to move to the next phase of their testing, which is actually loading Hagile up with stuff and attempting a drop to see if said stuff would survive the landing. The DMWD, they decided they wanted to start the tests with vehicles. They wanted to test drop some vehicles, namely Jeeps, to find out if the whole idea was feasible in practical terms, and if something that is, as delicate as a vehicle when it comes to lots of moving parts and a general reluctance to function after being crushed by great weight, they wanted to see if it would be possible to airdrop something like a Jeep to British troops out in the field without using parachutes. But they faced a problem, a brand new problem. You might be surprised to learn that the British military was very reluctant to hand over the four Jeeps that the DMWD requested. It turned out that no one was all that keen to give up four perfectly serviceable vehicles just for them to be, you know, dropped out of a plane in a box with rockets attached to it. Ah, look, mate, yeah, that's fine, thanks, that's all right. I reckon we'll just drive them around instead, they say. But eventually, and we have to give them some credit here for their sense of daring and adventure, if nothing else, it was the Americans that sacrificed some Jeeps at the Hagile's altar, although only two, not the requested four. Maybe they thought it'd just be good fun to watch. I don't know. Even if it goes wrong, it's like an exciting episode of Mythbusters for them. Maybe that's why they handed them over. In any case, they did. And one of the Jeeps was loaded into Hagile, which was then itself loaded into a bomber. And the first test was undertaken on a cold, snowy day in Britain. And this cold, snowy day was very poorly chosen by the DMWD for the test, because the snow dampened the rocket's fuses, causing them to fail to fire, and so Hagile crashed to the ground like it had been dropped from a crane, essentially destroying the first Jeep. So I guess it wasn't a total waste, because they discovered that the rockets were, after all, a very necessary part of the whole contraption, and you couldn't just drop a Jeep out of a plane and expect it to survive. But for the next one, they say, no worries, it's all good, it's fine, we've still got a second Jeep for the second experiment. We'll really make sure we get things right with this one. It'll be fine, right? So this time, the second time, with all these meticulous and very careful preparations made by the DMWD, Hagile was dropped from the plane once again with a Jeep inside it. The plumb bob triggered the rockets before landing. The rockets fired. They sent great plumes of smoke into the air, and there was no crash. There was no bang. Hagile had touched down safely. And upside down also, as well as safely, also it was upside down. So not not the ideal, not the result they were looking for. While DMWD had figured out how to get an empty Hadjal safely to the ground, once a payload was inserted, all bets were off. Continued experiments saw Hadjal keep landing upside down or on its side, or just nowhere near where it was supposed to, as unbalanced loads would tilt the rockets and send the whole thing careening off course. Also, during one test, I thought I should mention this. During one test, an electrician who was working on the wiring didn't realize the whole rig was actually live, and so connected the rocket's firing mechanisms, causing them to go off while Hadjal was on the ground, which launched it into the air. An early attempt at a British space program. I guess the whole thing was just a disaster. From go to woe, everything went wrong. It was just a catastrophe. It never really, well, I was going to say it never got off the ground. It did get off the ground, but not in the way that the British were perhaps hoping. But the funniest thing, right, as far as I'm concerned, the most hilarious aspect of this whole disaster when it came to the late stage testing of Project Hadjal was what happened when they loaded particularly heavy loads into the box before dropping it, right? Because if it was overloaded in this way, often the box would crash land into the ground before the rockets had a chance to fire. But then the rockets would still fire, right? Sending the whole thing hurtling back up into the sky only to crash a second time. Kind of like what happened in the second part of that video I told you to go and watch, right? So again, we talk about defeating the purpose of the entire project in the first place. The explicit aim of Project Hadjal was to have military equipment undergo soft, gentle landings, and it ended with this equipment being slammed into the ground at full speed, not just once, but twice. DMWD never managed to get Project Hadjal working to the point that it could actually be used in the war, although they were still testing it and its systems right up until 1945. But then, once the war ended, DMWD was disbanded, and Hadjal, along with all these other ridiculous projects, were shut down and largely forgotten about until years later, when all their classified documentation was made public. And we might have to cover some more of those absurd projects and weapons that the DMWD worked on, because oh boy, some of them are. You should go and have a look. Actually, you should go and have a look through them. And if you've got a favorite, let me know, and maybe I'll feature it in a future episode. And also, I guess at this point, I should also say that some of the ideas that came out of the DMWD were very good and very effective, and played an active role in the war itself. So I'm not here to trash them completely. They were innovators, right? They were bold experimenters, and some of the stuff that they got right had to be, you know, balanced out by things like Project Hadjal. Anyway, there's one final point I want to make about Hadjal here, because as I said before, we've had a fair bit of fun at its expense today, so I want to balance the ledger a little bit, because it sounds like a stupid idea, and largely speaking, it was a stupid idea. Strapping rockets facing the wrong way around to slow a falling object down. I mean, oh, what a foolish notion. But this foolish notion went on to be employed by space engineers to control the thrust of spacecraft. Retro rockets like the ones involved in Project Hadjal were featured in NASA's Project Mercury, Project Gemini, and of course, the Apollo program, episode 150, Get Across It. This is how we landed on the moon. And even today, reusable launch systems in space exploration rely on retro rockets to safely return craft to Earth or to land in places like on the surface of Mars. So, while Hadjal itself was a very silly and very amusing disaster from go to woe in the 40s, it seems like the idea behind it just came along a few decades before the time for it was right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.